This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 53, with Foundation mentor and founder of SASBloom, Matei Laban.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is the show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true driven life by doing work that matters, not only to them, but possibly the rest of the world. Every Thursday, we publish another conversation about the art and science of truly living a life of passion and how you too can do the work you're meant to do. My name is JC Preston and my co-host today is Daniel Postma. That's right. Daniel is now part of the team here at New Inceptions and, what is New Inceptions exactly? If you're a first-time listener, it is a website dedicated in helping creative entrepreneurs do passion-filled work and supporting a lifestyle that matches who they are. Today's session is powered by SASBloom. As you guys might know, I went through an entrepreneurial program called the Foundation back in 2012. You know, I loved the content and especially the new ways I was learning of building a business. I mean, not having your own idea, not using your own money, and not having the tech knowledge to build a passive income generating SaaS website, that's totally unheard of. And even today, founders usually have only one of those things. And here's the catch, though. If you don't have the tech to build your software site, if you don't know the technology it takes to build that software as a service site, you're going to need some outside help. But how do you find that outside help? You know, that was a point that I struggled with myself, and it really would have been great if SASBloom was available at the time that I was going through the foundation. Through SASBloom, Matei Laban, who's actually today's guest, helps people figure this part out. And as you'll hear from today's interview, he's helped people make this connection plenty of times. He's so good that he normally charges folks $100 for a 30-minute discovery session, which he actually calls a software strategy call. And in this call, he shows people three simple ways that could be potentially reducing development costs of their new SaaS-based website. However, we have a deal for you. Because you're listening to today's podcast, you're qualified to have that $100 fee waived. All you have to do is go to newinceptions.com/SaaSBloom, and you'll find a Google form there where you can sign up to have a chat with Matei. And again, if you're interested in this awesome opportunity, you can visit newinceptions.com/SASBloom, SASBloom. All right. So I've already mentioned that Matei is our guest today, and really his journey is not unlike many of ours. Having grown up in a tech and science-oriented world, he almost hated the idea of money. Then he read a couple of books that not only changed his perspective, but also changed his own philosophy. On top of these topics, we also discuss his time at the foundation, how he got into it, and how he became a mentor, and why someone who's from Eastern Europe is so interested in U.S. politics. If you're thinking about building your own SaaS-based business or have considered joining the foundation, then Matei is definitely a guy you want to know. Show notes are available at newinceptions.com/53. And just a reminder that after session 50, there's no longer going to be the word session in the show notes URL. And as usual, I'll be on after the conversation to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. I'm JC, and joining me for his debut as a co-host on the Angles of Latitude podcast is Daniel Postma. And Daniel was, if you remember, was our guest on session 35. And since then, he's been up to a ton of stuff, including writing a new book that actually just came out today of today's recording.
And it's called Shadowing a Multimillionaire for 30 Days. And This Is Everything I Learned is the name of the book. And it's really about his journey shadowing Dane Maxwell as his in-house apprentice. And really just everything that he kind of learned about, you know, working with him and for an entire month. And so I just want to say, Daniel, first of all, welcome back to the show. And you want to kind of talk about your book real quick a little bit?
Sure, I'd absolutely love to. This is a book that I promised to have finished about a year ago, and it's finally out today. In a lot of ways, it's been a huge growing experience for me, just sharing vulnerably the things that you learn in an intense experience, like an in-house apprenticeship. Getting to connect with people that you used to idolize is pretty intense.
Right.
But I was just rereading through some of the chapters of the book this morning. I was like, actually, this is a really entertaining book. So even if you just want to buy it for the sheer entertainment value, it's a pretty fun read.
Cool. And where can they find it if they're interested?
You can get it on Amazon.com, and you can find it in the show notes on the link to it.
Cool. So Daniel, let's move on to today's guest. His name is Matei Laban, and he's someone that both of us have had the opportunity to meet through the foundation. And those of you who have listened to the show know about the foundation, so we won't talk about it too much about it right now. But, you know, it's definitely a resource that if you want to dive deep into becoming a successful entrepreneur and get well connected to other entrepreneurs quickly over 6 months time frame, then you should definitely check it out. And so, Matei, welcome to the show, and glad to have you here.
Hey, guys. I appreciate the gesture, so I'm happy to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. I've been looking forward to getting to know a little bit more about you, and I think actually I'm going to hand it off to Daniel because he's really curious himself too. So,
yeah, I'm going to do some background check on you. So, Matei, actually, I was curious. Is that name Slovenian?
Yep, it is.
Sweet. Do people mispronounce it often?
Yeah, pretty much. Matej, everything, but it's okay.
Awesome. I was looking around on Facebook, and I saw the only thing I could find about your business is just that it's SaaS Bloom, so I looked up the website. Is that the only project you're working on right now?
Maybe a month ago I had three things going on. Now I only have two. So, SaaS Bloom is my main business right now, but just maybe a few days ago on Friday, I finished my SaaS product. Well, the first version, which I'm developing with my partner, Parker Woodward. It's called Referral River, and we're helping sales people get more referrals. I'll talk about that more later if you want. So that's my SaaS we're launching in a week or so. But SaaS Bloom is my primary business still until Referral River takes off. So I was a mentor in the foundation for a very long time, probably 3 years now. And just finished that in July. So I need to focus on my other businesses. So I don't do that anymore.
How was that experience for you being a mentor in the foundation?
I need to go before the foundation. So I actually joined the foundation by applying and sending a physical mail to Dane, which was basically a very crappy sales copy, basically saying, hey, I'm this very ambitious guy from Eastern Europe and I want to join the foundation. And if you let me in, I promise I'll create an awesome business, make you proud, and pay it forward. That was the three benefits I kind of given. And I was accepted. And so then after a year, so I was a student. And after that, they basically offered people who are very active in the community to become mentors, and they had us go through an NLP training, a short version, and then we started coaching and mentoring people. First, it was just, you know, mastermind groups, leading mastermind groups, and then it turned into masterminds, one-on-one coaching, mindset, and everything in between. So how was my experience? It was very rewarding. I don't know if people know, but coaches and mentors usually learn a lot by coaching other people, and that was definitely my experience. I probably talked to, and I'm not making this up, I actually have a CRM somewhere. I probably talked to 300 plus people, and yeah, it's quite an experience answering almost the same questions from very different people in different contexts, different situations, different beliefs, all wanting to do the same thing, which is get freedom by, you know, building a SaaS business or consulting or coaching or info product. Those four are probably the most common.
That's really amazing to hear. I'm curious also, did you always see yourself as an entrepreneur growing up?
No, no, definitely not. I was probably, yeah, my turning point was probably at 23 when, before that I was kind of, you know, a total lefty idealist. I wanted to be a scientist, and I thought business and all that was just bullshit.
Yeah.
And then a few things happened in my life where I realized, no, I really need money. So then I literally Googled how to make money, and somehow I stumbled upon two people who basically changed my perspective on business and other social stuff, social, political philosophy stuff. So one is Brian Tracy, and the other is Robert Kiyosaki.
Oh, so, nice. Yep. Yep.
So,
which that ordered.
Yep.
Basically two books that changed my view on capitalism, let's say. And after that, I got a job as a developer for a few years because I didn't feel ready to start a business. And I was, you know, I studied physics. I'm totally geek, introvert. You know, I didn't know how to sell, how to market anything. So I thought I needed some experience, how to run a business and so on. But I was definitely, at 23, I was definitely, you know, convinced that this is something I should do sometime in the future, but not now, not then. And so it took probably, 7 years until I kind of, you know, put myself into, okay, let's try this. If not now, then when? So at 30, I basically quit and started my own startup, which failed, but I learned a lot and got a lot of useful connections. Then the next one kind of succeeded. I exited with, I had a minority share and I sold it, and I joined the foundation because I wanted to build something on my own. And so that's how I ended up here.
Wow, that's really cool to hear. I have another question, which is, like, you're talking a little about growing up, you wanted to be a scientist. As a kid, who did you look up to, your mom or your dad, and why?
Probably more my dad, because he was a machinist and a factory worker, and he always brought me to the factory, and I also worked in that factory for every summer, and I was always interested in technology and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, my dad.
That's really cool. I have another question, which is, what was it that actually initially drew you to the foundation? What about the foundation was made it a program for you?
So my first, let's say, quasi-successful business was a SaaS that was just, so we basically built a email to fax and fax to email converter, and we sold it to Slovenian companies. And Slovenia is a really small country. And so we reached six figures, but it was not, you know, easy to scale outside, especially because the whole team was full of geeks who didn't know what the hell they were doing in terms of sales and marketing. And at that time, I knew and I understood from reading a lot that sales is where the game is, and I need to learn that. So that's how I think I found Dane via Mixergy, or maybe even before that. I don't know. I remember that Mixergy interview with Dane was something that made me, okay, this guy really talks to me, really knows how to do things that I don't know how to do. And that always motivates me to, you know, listen to people who know more than I do. And that's why I started following him. And the first year, that was 2011, where Software Roundtable was launched, which was the previous version of the foundation. And I didn't have the money to join at that point, and so I didn't, but I felt bad about it. And the next year I made sure that I'll join somehow, and I did.
Wow, that's really brilliant. I love that you saw that you wanted to do that and you waited a whole year for it and saved up the money.
Yeah,
for that.
It was actually very hard because at that point I didn't really have a lot of money, and the foundation costs like 6 months' salary in my country or even more, probably even more. So yeah, it was quite a journey just to get there.
Sweet. So what, if you could share with us a little bit more, like who in the foundation, like actually reached out to you first and you started to connect with and build a network of friends with, because one thing that like I noticed about the foundation is like when I joined it, it was entering a whole new world of people. It wasn't just the information that was great about it. So I'm curious, what was your experience with that? And who are some of the top people that are just like near and dear to your heart? No.
So at that time we had a HipChat and there was no Facebook group. So we basically got into HipChat and start chatting right away. But then I think we formed a group, or they formed it. I don't know. So then we quickly become, you know, we started friending each other. So I don't know who the first people were, but basically everyone from Beyond 13, if you know those people. So Carl, Josh, Jonathan Nation, Mirna, Renata, Amy Haufman, those people, TJ Barber, you know, I can rattle off 30 names because I was very active and still am in that group. And we chatted, we had small groups where we helped each other, and it was quite it was probably one of the things that I needed. A funny story, before I joined the foundation, I was afraid to basically pick up the phone, but it was even harder for me because I never talked to anyone outside of my country before. Mm-hmm. So the first idea extraction call, which was almost a cold call, I sent one email and he said, I don't know, basically call me whenever you want. And I didn't, I called him, and that was my first call in English. So I was, afraid. So there was a million things going through my mind at this call, but it was a short and sweet call. Then the next 10 calls were pretty horrible. But eventually I learned how to talk to people, and that gave me a huge self-confidence boost, because for two reasons. One is that, okay, I can now call people at the other side of the world, and you know, I know how to get past gatekeepers, and I know how to, you know, get to decision makers. So that in itself is a hugely valuable skill. But also, so my basic limiting belief at the beginning was that my English is not good enough and people will just, you know, hang up because I have a weird accent and that kind of stuff. That quickly went away.
Is there any quick tips that you can share about how to get to a gatekeeper if you're just trying to do a cold call?
Yeah, so for me, the best lesson was to go on YouTube and find Chet Holmes's Art of Getting in Touch with Anyone, I think, something like that. So Chet Holmes cold calling, that will teach you, you know, the tricks and tips and how to talk. But the basic premise is, usually people, when they call someone quote-unquote important, they immediately put themselves into an inferior position. So they would call and they would say, hey, I'm sorry, is this a good time, is this a bad time, hey, how are you doing, and blah, blah, blah. They would immediately signal to another person, whether it's a CEO or a gatekeeper, that,
right,
you know, they're not supposed to be doing that and something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Either you know, people can you know, figure that out. So the first thing you need to do is, you know, I'm an important person and I'm calling the other important person. So you need to be like, it's kind of hard, but you need to force yourself to be bossy a little bit.
Wow. You bring up, I just thought of something. Okay. So the Wolf of Wall Street, right? That is exactly why hey, I'm a VP of such and such, and just wanted to let you know that I'm calling you on behalf of blank. And that's why that works, is because if you're the VP of whatever market or whatever division, you're coming from a place of confidence and a place of high.
Exactly.
Awesome. Okay.
That's probably number one. So you need to understand that you're delivering value, you're an important person, and maybe you don't have money now, you don't have skills, but you will, you know, deliver value for this person or this company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that most students have a problem with. But I don't have any value. I don't know what I'm doing, you know? So you need to get over that. And you do that by, I don't know, I don't really believe a lot in faking till you make it, but to some extent you need to do that. But it's different for different people, but you need to find a way to see your value. And
would you still use the you know, when I was going through the foundation, one of the opening way of a cold email was, hey, I'm doing research on a market, can you help me out? Was that still usable or
yeah,
what?
It's still you. So there are a couple of methods that work, but the thing is that for every market, for every individual, there's a better way.
Okay.
Or an optimal way.
Gotcha.
So there's no one secret copy that really works and secret you know, subject line that will get opened up.
Okay.
For some markets, it works if you send 1,000 emails with the same thing, and you know, I don't know, 5% of the people will talk to you because you follow up relentlessly and so on.
Mm-hmm.
In some markets, you need to send 50 emails, really personal, long emails, and you know, you get to talk to people.
It's really
different. If you're, I don't know, talking to dentists, it's very hard to get them on the phone because they work all the time.
Right.
So you need to call them at 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. and that kind of stuff. But you need to learn that every market's a little bit different.
So let's go back a little bit. At the beginning, you were talking about SaaS Bloom as your company, but where did that initial idea come from for that, and how did it all come about?
Yeah, so during the foundation, I realized that I was one of very few people who had technical background. Most of the other people were either, you know, students or salespeople or business people, but there were maybe two or three programmers or IT managers. And a lot of people, when they found an idea, they sketched the solution, they got the money, and then, so now what? How do I find a developer?
Yeah.
What do I do? How do I assess them? How do I know who's good, who's not good? How do I avoid, I don't know, getting scammed? Because that's very often thing. And I helped a couple of people, you know, to first...
Slow down a little bit there. Sure. Tell me about the first customer. Who was the first person that you actually did this with? And tell me that story.
So the first person who paid me was David Cristello. He built and still... he's still building or growing a company called Jet... it's a long name. Jet Workflows. I'll send you a link later. It's basically a software that helps accountants file... or accountants do repetitive stuff. So it's like a checklist builder for different tasks. You know, when the tax day is due, you know, they need to go through, you know, a bunch of checklists, and they need to be sure that everything was done right. So he was basically saying, I don't have time to look for a developer. I know the information in the foundation is there, but it looks complicated, and I don't know how to assess them. I don't know. You know, I'm willing to pay $5,000 to $10,000 to build an MVP, but I want it to be right. I want something to be, I want someone who's done that before to be in my corner, basically as an insurance that this developer is doing their job. And, you know, can you help me review the code, select the developer, and you know, give me some tips along the way. And that's what I did. I found a guy in Eastern Europe who was, you know, CTO level developer that didn't cost so much as if you were to go to, I don't know, New York, or I think David is from Pittsburgh. So, you know, people would cost 100 per hour, but I found a guy who cost, I think, 25 per hour, and he was as good as anyone there, right?
Yeah.
And so I spent probably a month or two you know, basically advising David how to go about it, and teaching him to, you know, how to think about things, how to talk to developer, and that kind of stuff. So that was the first.
So did he actually pay you for that, or did you just?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, and how did you approach that? Because I know that a lot of people struggle with, you know, they have all this advice that they give people on a regular basis because they're just friendly. But how did you even bring that up, or did he just offer it?
So I was looking for, I knew that I wanted to do something in some kind of service like that, but I didn't know how to present it. I didn't know how to sell it. So
right.
We basically found each other at the right moment, but it's not luck. I don't believe in luck. I was actually after the foundation. I mm-hmm. think the foundation ended in May, and he contacted me in June or July.
Mm-hmm.
And after the foundation, I didn't have enough money to go to Vegas party, and I was really pissed, and I felt that you know, I wasted all the money. And so I decided, and my friend actually encouraged me to go and call everyone in the foundation and just talk to them and, you know, explain what I'm doing, what I'm good at, and how they can help me, and blah, blah, blah. And I did that. I probably called 100 people.
Oh, wow.
And talked to everyone. So eventually, it was basically an idea extraction, just in a little bit more friendly environment.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically talked to almost everyone in the foundation from my ear, and you know, we just compared notes and shared skill sets and so on and so forth. And me and David kind of found this problem solution fit, and you know, we started working together. And then after we did that, it immediately became clear. Okay, I know how to explain what I do. Why is it valuable? How valuable it is. And I told a few other people, and David also told a few other people, and, you know, I got a few clients. And
okay, cool. And so do you just normally, kind of blindside people with an invoice, or do you kind of offer a tier sort of thing, or what was your approach?
I'm constantly testing different options. I basically have a bunch of options. Right, currently I'm just changing my website, but it's something like I have a 30-minute call. Ask me whatever you want. I'll help you to answer any questions, because usually people just have questions like, is this even doable? What's my next step? Where do I start? You know, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I can answer that. I can help them. I can even introduce them to some developers I worked with before. So that's the first tier. Then the next tier is I'll find a developer for you. You know, just that. Mm-hmm. And the next one is if you need me for a long time, I'll be your technical advisor. It's a retainer service.
Okay.
And yeah, that's it.
So it's basically kind of and Brandon Northwick talked about this in his episode, but he was basically like, you know, just be free up front, have that free conversation, and ask them essentially if they want to have help implementing what you guys talked about, that's the sale. Right?
Yeah, usually when people come to me, it's usually by referrals. I don't market my service very much. Okay. That's my mistake, but I plan to do that more now. But they basically come to me usually because they are either so lost that they don't know where to start, and they have they don't know what to ask even.
Oh, okay.
And then when I explain what's typical, what can happen, what's good, what's bad, they're immediately and it's not even a sale. It's like they're immediately overwhelmed with details, right? Because there's so many things you need to do in order to, you know, even Microsoft fails at products. So, right. So it's not that, you know, if you're a professional, there's 100% chance of success. Vista was a complete mess, and arguably the best project managers work on that. So people usually say, okay, I'll think about it, but I think I definitely need your help.
Right,
you know,
right.
Something like that. The other typical scenario is someone goes ahead and hires some Indian and gets, you know, halfway through, nothing works, everything is buggy, and they went through, you know, most of the budget, and then they ask me what would I do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I try to salvage that, but it's very hard.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sounds exactly what I was thinking. So cool, man.
Mitaj, if you had $100 million, what would you use it to create in the world?
I would probably start a lot of companies, because I think that's the best charity you can do. And I'm all about, you know, ending poverty and helping people and getting to the next level as a human, you know, species. But yeah, I think entrepreneurship is the best vehicle to get there. So yeah, I'd definitely start a few companies and probably some basic research. I would definitely fund some basic research like physics and, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't know about the specifics. You caught me off guard, but my thinking process.
Yeah, that was
sweet. Yeah, that definitely. Build something new.
Yeah, you know, you were just kind of bringing up poverty and mm-hmm. some of the things that are kind of going on in the world, and you know, one of the things that I know that you're really big into, just like I am, is this whole world of politics.
Yep.
And you know, I've noticed that your Facebook feed, like mine, is in this political season is quite busy. And, you know, you have a very distinct political point of view, and a lot of it I personally agree with. You know, I've noticed that we share a lot of the same perspectives, and I've grown up very political and always wonder why others aren't involved or know very little about the entire process. And while, you know, you have people like yourself that are looking in on the U.S. political spectrum, I was kind of curious why you have, as someone in Europe, has such an interest, a very gung-ho interest in U.S. politics.
that's a question that a lot of people ask me in private. So first thing, I think I'll give you two quotes that basically convinced me that I need to be loud and don't care about what people think. One is from Dan Kennedy that says, if you don't offend anyone by noon, you're not doing anything important, which is, you know, on purpose provocative, but I think it's true. I mean, the point is not to be offensive, but the point is that you need to stir the pot a little bit. And the second is when you're talking about strong or divisive issues, it's important that you talk in public, because you won't convince the people who are already convinced, but you will convince the unconvinced, or, you know, people in the middle who don't yeah. know anything about it. And people actually tell me that on Facebook. I haven't thought about this and that. You know, and the funniest thing is that one person from the U.S. actually asked me why I prefer Gary Johnson, and he, you know, thinks about supporting him and blah blah blah. So it's pretty funny that I, quote unquote, an outsider, know more about U.S. politics than most Americans. But yeah, it's kind of a hobby of mine. I was always interested in, you know, knowing about everything, and politics is something that's, you know, it's like a house of cards going on all the time. So
where do you think that interest came from, specifically political wise?
Probably, I don't know, history of our country. I was forced to know about that because we had an independence war when I was 12 or so. And then all the things that were happening in the Balkans at that time. In the 90s, it was pretty much, you know, you need to know about it. It's not, you know, I live very close to the very horrible, in places where horrible things happened. So, I think that was the driver. But like I said, I was always curious, and I'm always, so the thought or the driver behind all that is, how can we make world a better place, and you know, leaders have the most power, hence I need to know how they're thinking, why they're thinking like that, how are they influencing people, and so on. So
because the states are apparently the big powerhouse,
there are things that affect me directly because of the foreign policy, or because my clients are mostly Americans. So, you know, when I was doing the extraction in 2012, everyone basically started talking about, oh my God, if Obama wins, this is going to be the end of the world. That was like every second call was a debate about politics. And then, okay, so what do you want to know?
Really?
Yeah, how do you run your business? Yeah, taxes are too high. So it was super hard. Yeah, because, you know, in 2012, foundation started in October, right? So when I started doing AD extraction, it was like November 3rd, you know? So, and just a few days before the election. So, yeah.
That's crazy. So that's pretty much when you can say that you started paying attention to U.S. politics, and ever since then you've been... Okay. Cool. Wow. What kind of leaders do you look up to? I mean, like right now we have Hillary, Johnson, and Trump. And, you know, I've always personally called myself a libertarian conservative sort of type, where I guess, you know, I'm a big Rand, I'm a Ron and Rand Paul follower, and a little bit of a Cruz, you know, Cruz is kind of cool to me. But yeah, what we have right now, and I'm going to, you know, maybe we'll just leave this to another time. Johnson, I agree, he's better than what the other two people are.
I think even Jill Stein is better than you know, although I don't agree with her. You know, she's way too left and too crazy for me. But Johnson and Jill are at least decent human beings, right? The other two are, you know, just horrible.
Statists, yeah, that's the term.
But it's not even that. I mean, you can say that Mitt Romney or Obama are statists, but they're different kind of people. I mean, they're not, well, it's hard to say. We don't have enough information, but as much as we have, it's easy to say that Obama is you know, a better person than Hillary, and Mitt Romney is better than Trump, and you know, I have a hard time finding a person who would really honestly say that that's not the case. Even right wingers would probably say that Obama is is a better person than Trump and Hillary.
Yeah, I've actually heard that they'd rather almost put up with 4 more years of Obama just so we can have a better selection again next time, because at least we know this guy, you know.
For people on the left or on the right, I totally recommend to go and listen to, I think, 1980 debate between Bush Sr. and Ronald Reagan about immigration. And you know, their debate is more similar to you know, Sanders and Hillary than to Trump. So, you know, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I just, you know, it boggles my mind when, and you were kind of touching on this already, but it boggles my mind when people don't really want to get involved with spreading awareness of politics and current world events, and, you know, they kind of want to stay out of it, especially in the entrepreneurial world, right? A lot of the leaders that we hear on, you know, and the big podcasts and all that sort of stuff, and they just want to stay out of it as much as they can. And to me, I feel that it's all, and I think this is probably the same way to you, is that it's all kind of intertwined. And it's like, if you don't stand up for freedom now, you're not going to have the freedom later to be able to do your own business, your own whatever, because then we're going to be in a socialist state and all this sort of stuff. And I was wondering how you actually felt about that.
I think, so it's hard to, well, I think as entrepreneurs, the biggest desire that most entrepreneurs have is to have more freedom and to help people and create value. So if you start with that, right, and you see what kind of debates are going on, most of the things are irrelevant. I mean, and most of the things are deliberately, you know, on the opposite sides, where the middle ground would work very well. And I think this polarization is more dangerous than actually going with one or the other. Because, you know, if you don't do anything for 12 years, nothing important, no important decision is made in 12 years, it's probably worse than trying something that's wrong and then correcting it.
Well, I mean, and even looking at that from an entrepreneurial point of view, right? Let's kind of think about, okay, we have, if someone was wanting to start a business, right? And they're like listening to Pat Flynn, and they're listening to Dane, and they're listening to all these big names, you know, the list goes on. But you're listening to these people and they're like, man, I really want to do that. I really want to do that. I really want to do that. And they, you know, they have all this head knowledge, and I'm guilty because I did it. That is dangerous to themselves, because eventually with that much stuff in their head, they don't know where to start.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't know where to take action. And they just, it's like, the more you know, the less sure you are of yourself. And I think that kind of contributes to the other, you know, with politics and world events, is what you were just saying, if I was hearing you right, is that not knowing what's really going on is kind of the same situation.
There are two ways to look at these things. One is, you know, some people are in, their argument is, okay, I'll ignore everything and I'll build my business and then I'll do something, or I'll still ignore it and live my life because it doesn't really matter. It's somewhat valid point. You know, if you really ignore everything and you just, you know, implement the important things when taxes go up, or, you know, you have a bunch of regulation, you just do that and you carry on. It's true. Some people say, you know, you're not going to die because there's, you know, additional healthcare loss and your business is not going under because of that. Yeah, that's somehow true, but it keeps piling up through the years and it gets, you know, some people are basically just quitting from in principle because it's too hard. So that's one way of looking at it. The other way is you need to be, you need to devote a certain amount of energy towards that because it's important. And you and I are probably, we can't help each other. I mean, help ourselves. We are drawn towards that. And we want to think about things and we want to, you know, talk to other people. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? So it's hard to give any what's right or wrong, but I definitely feel that if more people would even know what's going on, it would be much harder for cronies to rule the world.
Right. Well, and the other thing is that, you know, here in the States, and I don't know if you're aware, but we're actually only, from what I hear, we're only teaching U.S. history after 1880. Which is kind of scary.
I heard about that.
I'm not too thrilled about that. And that's, for those of you who don't know, that's really when I believe it was Woodrow Wilson started coming into power not too long after that, and just really where the progressive movement starts. And look into that because you know, when the union started back around the time of the Industrial Revolution, then, I mean, it's a good idea in theory, but in actual practicality, it doesn't really help the individual. Mm-hmm. So that's
most thinking. People don't know that the Pilgrims spent, I think, the first 50 or so years in some kind of socialism, communism, basically. I don't know whether they didn't have money or they had some very communal way of living and it didn't really work, and they changed it to, you know, you get to keep what you earn and build, and then the huge leap started. Most people don't know that. Because it happened in, I don't know, 1700s somewhere. maybe even before that. I don't know exactly, but there's a lot of things that are, you know, in the books and people don't know about because they you know, they were born in, I don't know, 1980, and that's where their knowledge about the world starts.
There's a book that I got, I think I want to say about 2010, 2011, 2012, which is like the real American history. It's kind of thick, but it's definitely one that I'll share on the show notes that if people really want to have an interest or have an interest in really kind of getting an idea of our history here in the States, then they can check that book out. But what are some sources that you have that you follow that, you know, someone that is one, you know, starting out to learn more about world events and politics in general.
Okay.
And
well, it's connected to entrepreneurship, but I found that the best way is to go to the edges. So I listen to Young Turks, who are, you know, super progressive, So first rule, I avoid mainstream media. So CNN, NBC, that's all crap to me.
Yes, Fox, even Fox News people. It used to be cool, but
so this election, this cycle just proved that they're just talking heads. They don't have any opinions. Yeah. They don't have any principles. That's crap. So I listen to total leftist and total right wingers, and then I try to form my own opinion. Right. So I would, so on politics, so like I said, I would listen to Young Turks. On the right, I would listen to, I don't know, Lowder with Crowder.
I'm going to say Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck, Cato Institute. So my philosophy is like, what's that guy from, that magician guy from Bullseye?
I was actually just thinking about Penn Jillette.
So he's kind of a nice... He has a way to communicate what I believe in a nice way,
and I think if
we were to implement that, you know, anywhere in the world, we would see a huge, you know, increase.
Some of my most favorite conversations are actually between him
yeah,
and
Glenn. Yeah. I think that there's one about libertarian atheist. I think. Yeah, one that I listened to that was really long was Every Day is an Atheist Holiday or something like that. That's the name of his book. And they talk about religion and freedom of speech and so on. And it's really, really cool to see two people who obviously have very different religious beliefs come together and agree on almost everything.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's really what it is that regardless of your background, I mean, if you can get together and actually have a decent conversation and iron some of this stuff out, I mean, that's what I think it's about, really. Yeah. So,
for the entrepreneurial stuff, the list is long, but I started Hacker News in the morning and then Facebook and usually overwhelmed after 5 minutes of reading that.
Right. Yeah, I got to get those Google alerts set up so that you actually are paying attention to your own niche and all that stuff.
But the thing that my friend, coach, partner taught me is that you basically need to understand what kind of person you are. So there are certain tests you can do and you realize what kind of person you are in terms of advantages and disadvantages, strengths and weaknesses, and then you need to work on your weaknesses a little bit or outsource them and you know, focus on your strengths a lot, and that wow. comes up so, everywhere, right, in politics. I don't want to talk about, you know, issues that I'm not informed about. So I have this trick on Facebook. Sometimes people yell at me. I would share something that I'm not sure about, and then people will say, this is wrong, this is fake, this is wrong because of this or that, and that's how I learned. I don't do it a lot. Mm-hmm. Mostly it's by accident because I just see the headline and it makes sense, and then I share it and I start reading, and then I see, okay, this is wrong.
Well, or that, and just like me, sometimes you like to stir the pot,
Yeah,
you're
saying, exactly.
Cool. So, I guess the next question is that, do you have any, as far as the future goes, I mean, what are your future plans? Do you have any, you know, books in it coming out, or
yes, I'm... So one of my weaknesses is writing. So I need to find someone to help me, but I want to write a book, what I learned from coaching or mentoring 300 plus mm-hmm. entrepreneurs. I think that would be, even if I just, my plan is to just collect my questions and answers from all the platforms I'm involved with and just editing that and proofreading it. And it's probably a book already because I probably, you know, replied to 1,000 emails at least, and as many blog posts and, you know, the Foundation app and Facebook and blah, blah, blah. So I definitely have a lot of material. So that's the plan. But in terms of SaaS Bloom, I definitely want to move into information business, creating some kind of membership site or group to help people with software-related challenges. But as for Referral River, we're pretty confident we can get to six figures within a year. So I'll be focusing on those two businesses from now on.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Moving on into the rapid fire questions. I'm going to go ahead and let Daniel start with a couple of them and then I'll finish up. But, anyway, these don't have to be answered quickly. They're just going to be shot at you quickly. Okay. So,
hey, Matei. All right. Three influencers or teachers that have catapulted you to where you are today.
So, first, my coach, mentor, friend, Nina, CEO of VisionQuest.com. She basically taught me how to not go against my nature. So how to find my strengths, my weaknesses, how to apply my genius in the right way, how to find problems, the right problems to solve, the right advisors to listen to and who not to listen to, because that's a problem most people do. They just listen to everyone that makes sense and then they go in all directions and they don't move. Right. So that's the first one. Can I do more than three? So on a business side, it's a tie between three people. Definitely Dane, Amy Hoy, and then Kennedy probably influenced my how I do things and how I think about business the most. And on the political side, I will go with Thomas Sowell.
I don't know that name. Who's that?
He's I don't know where he's employed. I think he was an economist. He was basically a right hand of Milton Friedman, and he was born in Bronx, and he explained that affirmative action and that kind of stuff hurts minorities more than it helps them. And, you know, that kind of contrarian stuff really, first I was like, he's talking nonsense. And then when I started studying him, there's hardly anything that I disagree with him. So if you go to Uncommon Knowledge and listen to his interviews, it's pretty good.
Sweet. So what's one gift that you like giving to others?
Books. Books or food. it depends. If they're overseas, I send them books. if a friend, it's wine or something.
Any particular titles that you give most often?
80/20 marketing and sales, or The Ultimate Sales Machine by Chet Holmes. Those two are probably the most.
That's written. Awesome. So what's one thing that you believed as a 28-year-old that you'd now tell yourself is bogus, and why?
You should find your passion, and then, you know, everything will be easy. Finding your why, finding your passion, that's all BS. And the person that really explained that the best is that guy who Dirty Jobs.
There is such a mixed, it's micro, yeah, and there is such a mixed opinion on this, but I agree with perspectives on both. But go ahead and say what you're going to say.
Micro, and there's one other guy who's in academia. They basically say the same thing. It's basically you need to master something, and until you do, you just accept random stuff until you find something you're good at, and then you double down on that, and that's when passion comes in. So I think the finding your why and your passion is it's a wrong definition. People assume that, okay, I'll answer this questionnaire and then I'll know what to do forever. But it definitely changes, and there are other important factors that influence how you will do, how successful you'll be in a certain area.
You want to, how about this? When someone asks how do I find my passion, I usually answer it with, you don't find your passion finds you.
Yeah, exactly.
You.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And okay. Because
here's a good way of thinking about it. I think passion comes after, not before you do something. And that's a crucial distinction, because people think, okay, I need to answer those 27 questions and then I'll know what to do. But you won't, because it's just in your head. You need to start moving, and then, the path will show itself. In a similar or tied thing is, scratch your own itch. The startups people talk about that all the time. Yeah, if you just fix something that bothers you, then, there are 1,000 people like that, and then you'll be successful. That's also, I don't know, I don't believe that, because I have, and especially developers and technical people have itches that are very specific, very weird, and there's 1,000 people that have the same problem, but they're not willing to pay for that problem. They're, it's questionable that there's even 1,000 people who care about that, and so on. So
do you think it could be that it's more of a kick in the butt to kind of get you going, that those tools are good for?
It's possible. It's possible, but I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, the debate's still out on it. I mean,
I totally agree with what Dane and Amy Hoy say, that they have almost the same philosophy. You need to find people who are willing to pay and have the history of paying for some solution. They need to be, ideally, they want to, their businesses, so that they won't change their mind the next day and they have money to pay. And you need to find what they need, what they want, and what they're paying for. Not dream up some something that you care about, and then hopefully the whole world will go with you. So unicorns for me are just that BS.
If you're going to place any ad out into the world cost free, what would it be?
An ad?
An ad. And it doesn't have to be necessarily for a business. It just has to be, something that you want out there.
This ties to my philosophy. So I think raising consciousness is the best vehicle to improve everything in the world. So, something to do with, go to Vipassana meditation. That's what would be my advice. Some form of meditation where, really go deep inside and start, cleaning your mind. That's the quick way to describe it. Mm-hmm. So,
and where would you put that ad or message?
Probably in everyone's Gmail box or on top of Facebook feed.
I like it. I like it. Cool.
Or on the moon.
On the moon. There you go. Just permanently etch it into the freaking moon. No.
Yeah.
Cool. One thing that is under $100 that has changed your life.
Oh, definitely books. Spin selling, probably. I don't know how I would be where I am if I hadn't learned how to sell. So it's been selling $25, one of the best books I ever bought. I don't know. Well, obviously, computer stuff, but that's more expensive. keyboard. I don't know.
So generally just a way of engaging in knowledge, things, tools that help you do that.
Okay. Cool. Skype World monthly. That also changed my life because I was able to call the landlines in America. And that started my journey.
Cool. When you think of the word success, who comes to mind and why?
Oh, I was thinking about that actually. I'm torn between great philosophers and great business people. So on the business side, I don't know, John D. Rockefeller, for example.
Oh, nice. Nice. I like you bringing up those old ones. You know that.
Yeah.
Man. And I was going to bring this up actually earlier in the conversation, The Men Who Built America.
That's a great series.
If you want to, that series, man, that really
and if you really want to know what they were all about, I would read Titan. It's super long, but Rockefeller has this bad, I don't know, people dislike him because I think they don't understand him.
What, just because he didn't make libraries? What?
It's funny because people just know the three things that he did wrong, and they don't know a thousand things that he did right, or people are still driving around and enjoying all the oil benefits and they curse him a lot. on the other side, it's probably Buddha. The Buddha.
Okay. Yeah.
And or maybe some Roman philosophers like Marcus Aurelius. Anyone from Stoicism.
Mm-hmm.
From the modern era, probably people like Dane or Derek Sivers. Yeah.
Okay.
He's a cool guy. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. If someone was wanting to get out of their own way and start their own SaaS business, what are four pointers that you suggest that they do that they do next to grow their business?
Yeah, understand your audience. So how you understand your audience is, the rule of thumb is you are able to write their diary for them. So I wake up, I did this, I did that. That's how you know. I believe this, I believe that. That's how you know your audience. That's the first and the most important thing. Once you know that, then you know where they hang out, how they think, what they read, and then you position yourself into conversations that they already have either with themselves or their group. So for example, if you're targeting dentists and you know that there's a magazine or some kind of trade show, that will probably perform much better than buying random Facebook ads. Right, so that's the second thing, where they find their watering hole, so to speak, where they go and what they talk about. So advertise there. And the next two are more on the internal side. So set up a referral system. That's the easiest way to get the best leads. And the last one is to measure everything in your business and make decisions based on numbers. That should probably be the first one. But making decision number or database decisions and understanding your customers. If you just do those two, everything else will kind of show itself.
Okay. Cool. And if they need help implementing this this new plan that you gave them, where can they find you on the web?
So just email me at matej@sasbloom.com or go to sasbloom.com and, there's a bunch of ways to contact me. Or on Facebook.
And you spell your name how?
M-A-T-E J.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Matteo, it's been great having you on today's show, and really look forward to what you're going to be doing in the future.
Yeah, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Yeah, it was great having you.
Thank you.
And there you have it. Matteo is he's definitely a wealth of knowledge when it comes to building this specific type of business, and you can tell his heart is in the right place when he's helping others start their own SaaS business. And you know, I'm glad to personally see him doing so well on his own these days. It's inspiring to me to see that people can go through as much transformation as he has in the last couple of years. You know, again, if you're wanting to see how Matteo can help you start your own SaaS-based business, sign up on his Google form found at newinceptions.com/SaaSBloom. And don't forget, you'll have the normal $100 fee waived for going through that link. That link, along with today's show notes extras, will be at the show notes at newinceptions.com/53. Show note extras for this session include two videos that Matteo and I discussed, as well as an intro to the foundation by Dane Maxwell and a testimonial for Matteo by a past foundation student named Maxie. So that's pretty much a wrap for session 53. Daniel, myself, and the rest of the New Inceptions crew appreciate you checking us out today. We'd really appreciate it if you left us a review on, well, however you're listening to the show. Next week, I'm proud to have on someone that those of you who are familiar with Fizzle will definitely know, Barrett Brooks. Yes, that Barrett Brooks. And if you don't know Barrett, he has been a staff member for Fizzle for a couple years now, and just recently, he moved off to ConvertKit to lend them his marketing expertise. And in this particular chat, we also introduce Clay Green as a new co-host of the show, who joins Layla and myself to find out what all Barrett has been up to since making the move. We also find out more about ConvertKit itself. We fill in some gaps about his personal experience as a founder and why personal freedom means so much to him. So stick around next week for that awesome chat and the introduction of Clay to the team. So that's pretty much it, guys and gals. Thanks again for joining us. And until next time, dig in, have fun, and take care. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web @newinceptions.com.